Welcome back to Smell You Later, coming to you live from the past.
Two episodes in a row. Can you believe it?
Can you believe it?
It's been a hard spring, y'all. We're sorry.
Q2 has been a doozy.
Q1 was a doozy too. Jesus Christ. But
how many Q's are there?
Four. Oh my God. I'm sick of them.
Ugh. Oh my God. Happy tax day.
Oh God.
We're too live on tax day. Our favorite subject.
Last thing I want to talk about.
God, I didn't make enough money to be on the IRS's pages, so thanks for that.
I got fucked again this year.
No.
Oh, but yes.
How? You have a real job.
I know, but last year I freelanced my ass off.
Oh, you did. Yeah, you really did.
I gotta stop that.
I just don't get it.
No, I'm not, because I don't have any time to do anything. But I do have time to record this podcast.
Thank God for that. He's got his priorities.
I do.
Oh my God. I was listening to, it was like some NPR news bit about TikTok bad tax advice. And it was basically just like, no, you can't write off your fragrance collection because you have a fragrance podcast. And I was like, wait, what?
Disagree.
I'm going to look into that.
Don't take advice from TikToks.
Don't. But
only take some advice from us.
Agree. Only take any advice at your own risk.
You know, I was just thinking, we need one of those. I know we don't have a soundboard, and that's probably for the best. We're not one of those podcasts, but we need like just a button that we set, that we hit and just say like, allegedly.
Yeah. The allegedly button.
Keep our asses out of hot water.
That's our fact checker. The allegedly button.
That's our legal counsel.
There's a new Juliet Has a Gun fragrance that I really want to smell. I think it's just called Juliet.
Yeah.
They're having an event for it next week.
I said I would go. I don't know that I'm going to.
Come.
Are you going?
I'm going.
Okay. I'll go if you go.
Yeah. It's funny. I was rewatching that movie, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Oh, that movie is so good.
It's so funny. And I just remembered the part where Rachel Zennis' character, she's like fighting with somebody else. Who's like, oh, your podcast is so annoying. And then she's like, it takes a really long time. And you have to schedule the guests. And you have to do all the promo. And it's a lot of work. Like, wow. I felt that.
Same. I was watching that and I was like, oh, this is a real horror movie. Yeah. It's way too close to home. So funny. Yeah. That's fine. Everyone's allowed to rip on podcasters. We deserve it.
I was going to say, I hope our sound quality has been improving, but
I'm fucking yelling into this mic, so yeah. I hope everyone's happy. It's really been bothering me. Like, I know that we're stupid fucks, but we take the quality of the show really seriously. Wow.
I just hate when there's no, like, audio cleanup to phone interview audio quality. And I'm like, please, just run it through a compressor. Put it in GarageBand. It's a free program. It can help you auto-compress. Please.
It's no one's harder on me than me. So it's like, if I think this is okay, then God damn it.
I'm also like, not with our editing process, but when I listen to podcasts, I feel like I'm a fairly passive listener. I'm doing something else. I'm like, I'm occupied. So I'm not honing in on audio stuff unless it's egregious.
I don't know. I listen to podcasts to enjoy myself, not to critique the hosts, but I guess that's just, I'm kidding.
It's open season on podcast hosts.
I don't mean to be a huge bitch tonight.
Tynan, what do you smell like today?
Yo, okay. I called this in because of the person that I am. And also, I looked at the build of the scent and I was like, oh no, this seems all right. Like, this seems good. I wouldn't have, if it looked like the antithesis of what I liked, I'd just let it be. But my God, I am wearing Lover by The Maker. And if you don't know, The Maker is a boutique hotel.
Oh, is that the one from Lev, the guy who does Fresh Beauty?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's only one. I don't think it's a franchise yet, but The Maker is, it's not upstate, but it's not in Manhattan. I think you like take a car to it. I don't know. It's not.
Okay.
Whatever. They did a line of what I believe was six fragrances. I think in 2021, they actually, when I did that story in L, no, 2022, when I did that print story in L about skin scents, they had a skin scent and they sent me like this really long lead sample. Anyway, they launched and it's been around. I don't see all that many people talking about it, but they just recently launched Lover, which is the name of the scent, obviously. And I was like, I got to get my hands on that because of me. And it finally came today and I put it on and it's just too good for me to handle. It's so beautiful. And I'm not trying to oversell it, because maybe we're not reinventing the wheel here with it, but it is so beautiful. And that's all it needs to be.
Another. What was their, how do they interpret lover with this one?
Who cares? It smells good.
Describe it to me.
It says that it's inspired by true intimacy. Lover Eau de Parfum is a hypnotic woody scent that evokes a warm embrace. Creamy sandalwood, luscious fig, and sparkling vetiver blanket the skin, while layered notes of jasmine sambac, your favorite, narcissus, and a whisper of oud slowly reveal themselves.
Ooh, like that desires. Sounds good.
Between two lovers. Yeah, they call the fragrance character, whatever that means, warm woods with keynotes of luscious fig, sensual vetiver, flirtatious jasmine sambac, and arousing oud. So I guess the copy is doing a lot. I'm like low-key embarrassed by it, but
I love to be aroused by oud.
I love to be aroused, period. But it is just really stunning. I was expecting a little bit of a more fig forward woody scent, which I would have been very into. They didn't promise me that. That's just how I interpreted it. They flipped it on me, because this is certainly like sandalwood, I think, first bolstered then by the fig. But okay. I will say that sandalwood is often so light and blonde and airy. And this really isn't. This is a heavier take on sandalwood that I really enjoy. And I actually only noticed the oud as I just read it to you. I didn't think there was oud in this. And all day I've been thinking, like, there just seems like a touch of oud in here. And lo and behold, there is. And
there it was.
It's just, it's gorgeous. It is definitely woodier than anything else. Mm-hmm. But it is both bold and sensual and sensorial plush in the way that woods can all be. Mm-hmm. And the fig really gives it some nice body. I love it. I would love it regardless of the name, but of course I love the name. I'm so happy with this.
Fig and oud with vetiver sounds really good. Mm-hmm. And like, I can see why that would be a hard scent to describe, because it's got so many main characters in it.
It does, but it's not, no shade, but it's not like all that, it doesn't feel all that complex. It feels pretty elevated while still being simplistic. Okay. And I think that the same could be said about a lot of the maker fragrances.
Yeah. Did you get them all or just one?
They only sent me the full size of this one, which I'm fine with. It's the only one I wanted. Back in 2021, too, they actually probably was 2021 by that point, but they sent me teeny tiny vials of the other one. The fragrance are the collection hadn't even like been announced yet. Yeah. But I liked them all. I didn't really need to go back to any of them. This one I need to go back to. I really love it.
Where do they just sell them at the hotel?
They apparently have a brick and mortar in New York. They have a store, which I didn't know about.
I didn't.
But also, they've been fucking sending editors of the Maker Hotel left and right. I'm like, knock, knock.
Not us.
Yeah, literally. But yeah, really gorgeous. I really love it. It's been a really fun wear, and I can't wait to put it on again tomorrow. So
the lover. Is it the lover or just lover?
Just lover.
Okay. Like the Taylor Swift song. Got it.
I didn't want to say it. It's also an album. Sable, what do you smell like today?
I smell like a new scent from the Alchemist's Garden. Alchemist's Garden. It's called
the Gucci,
a Floral Verse. And it came unexpected care of the Coty team who reps Gucci.
Shout out.
And it had, I'm not describing the scent at all, but I'll get there, I promise. It came in like a book. It was like a fake book package where the pages were, and it was just like in a little cutout in the book, which I thought was really cute. And again, I saw the name and I was like, meh, probably not for me. And then I sprayed it on. I was like, wait, this could be for me.
Oh.
It is floral. Yes, as the name suggests. But it's not floral forward. It's almost like a film cell of floral, in the sense that it has this very glassy, translucent, light texture to it. And you know me, I don't like to look up the scent notes immediately, because I just want to live with it for a bit and see what I smell without being influenced.
Yeah.
And then eventually I'm like, tell me. The website says it is black tea essence, jasmine sambac. Surprise. Oh, sorry. Jasmine sambac absolute and white musks. So I appreciate that they keep the scent profile like pretty simple. You don't need to know all that.
Yeah, that's not for you.
Yeah, then they just write you a poem in the product description. I'm like, huh?
Wait, black tea, Jasmine Sambac Absolute, and musks.
White musks.
Caucasian musks. That sounds really pretty. Maybe really not pretty. For me, but like...
Because it's not... Yeah, like it's not floral forward. It is. Sure. It has like the sweetness and the dewiness of like flower petals, and but it feels greener. And the tea element, I think, is what keeps it kind of light and refreshing. But it almost reminds me of a 90s style, like fresh scent. But it's got, because it's like I feel like all of these Alchemist Garden fragrances, like whatever the scent profile is, they're just so concentrated. Like they're dense. They are dense scents. You will smell them all freaking day, which is great because they are so expensive. And I always forget that until I look up a scent and I'm like, wow, this is $384. Oh my God. One size.
It's 3.4 though, right?
Yeah. It's only
fucking better be.
Big size only.
That's a gorgeous color of the bottle.
It's this like Tupperware green, which it's I think is very chic. Yeah. I think it's very chic. Granny Smith green. The packaging's beautiful. It pops off. It is a $384 experience. I get it. This is a gorgeous scent that I feel like my mom will probably steal this from me. So maybe I'll just give it to her next time I see her. But it's so pretty. And I love I just love that they took a floral in a not, I don't know, chokingly floral direction as their aesthetic sort of suggests.
Have they been releasing more of the Alchemist Garden collection lately? I feel like I've been seeing
more. They sent at least two, because there was another follow-up that just dropped and I was like, oh.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny. I feel like I've been seeing those, boring to talk about social media, but it's all we do. Like, I've been seeing those around like the internet more lately, which I'm like, okay, people, I guess, are buying these. It's not just beauty editors.
I always forget that there's just like rich people in the world.
I know. I really like that collection. Not many of them are for me. I have a few.
Same. Yeah. Really, it's 50-50 whether I'm going to like one of them generally.
But it's also, they're so floral forward that it's not for me. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. They're not going to do an Alchemist Garden vanilla and that's okay. But no, I think they're really beautiful. I actually think they've gotten better.
I actually think they've gotten better too. I feel like they're more balanced. When they first launched, it was just like so strong and just hefty.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I love the bottles too.
I do love the bottles.
Wins all around.
It's so funny. I'm like reading the product description. The scent opens with Indian jasmine sambac drawn from the night blooming flower that is said to capture the secrets of the moon. Tell me your secrets, moon. Wish we had this with the eclipse last week.
Literally. I'm really excited about today's guest. I'm just going right into it.
Go right into it.
I am really excited about this guest today. I feel like I don't want to speak for everyone, but they were this omnipresent force in my sort of understanding of fragrance as a young adult.
Yeah.
I was certainly past high school and college and all that. But once I was really finding what I liked about fragrance, they were always in my periphery. And I gravitated toward them, obviously, because I love gourmands. And I always have. And they were sleek and affordable and very much my shit. So today we welcome Le Monde Gourmand to the show. We've talked about them at length and figured it was time to talk to them. God damn it.
So we have Anne Soma. She is the chief brand officer at True Fragrance and Beauty, which is the umbrella corp that owns Le Monde Gourmand, as well as does a bunch of other brand development scents for other retailers.
She has some, I liked that she has obviously such a deep knowledge of Le Monde Gourmand, but could also speak to creating fragrances for other brands that we know and love and work with in similar ways. I know that we've spoken to other people who do the same or similar things, but I really like her take on it specifically.
Yeah. Malls. Do we call them mall scents? Do we call them store scents?
I think mall scents.
Like mall scents. Yeah. Those were our introductions into perfume. So it's, of course, as soon as I think mall scent, of course, I think Gap scents. I think, do you remember Lucky Jeans? They had their own scent. The pink one. And then there was like, I think a green one.
I wore the green one.
Yes. I was obsessed with them.
Same.
Yeah. Anthropology has her own scents. All of these like sleeper little secret perfume sources that we forget.
Let me buy that fragrance.
Yeah, I know. I think it's I think it's still available. I don't know. Probably like TJ Maxx.
He's gone to Google. But yes.
Yeah. So it was actually really fun to talk to Anne about all that stuff, because it's something I feel like that everyone is familiar with. Of course, I think of like Abercrombie Fierce, but no one really thinks about who's making those.
Right. But now we know.
We will know starting now.
I'm Anne Soma. I'm the Chief Brand Officer at True Fragrance. I have been at True for 11 years, and we have a portfolio of brands. We do some private label brands and exclusive brands for retailers like American Eagle. We do some celebrity brands, and we have some of our own brands like Le Monde Gourmand that I have been working on since it was born almost 10 years ago.
Wow. Whenever somebody tells me they've had a job for longer than 5 years, I'm like, how did you do it?
In beauty. I always say, like, this relationship is, I've only been married for 15 years. So this is my second longest relationship.
I love that.
Yeah. Beauty moves fast.
It's a special place.
Yeah. And we like to kick off every episode by asking our guests, what do you smell like today?
Oh my gosh. Right now I smell like Petalas and Mirror, which is our newest. Pasta Soir, which is a BDK fragrance.
Oh, I love BDK.
I also was smelling Melando, which is our body mist.
It's
in here, but
the body mists are fun. They're all good.
Yeah. So I find really cool about True, because Tynan and I both have a similar entryway to fragrance, which was the mall. So we have so much nostalgia and fuzzy feelings for all these kind of brand scents, like you said, like the retailers like American Eagle, Gap Scents. Obviously, Bath & Body Works is a different beast, similar animal. And when it comes to brand-driven fragrances that have, I guess like when it's a fashion store that then decides to launch a fragrance, when these brands come to you, like what's the type of stuff they ask for? Or what do they want to communicate with their scents?
It's interesting. I feel like it depends, obviously, on the retailer and their relationship with the consumer and where they're at as a brand, right? Some people have a very strong vision of what they want the fragrance or the beauty assortment to represent based on where they are at in their consumer messaging. And sometimes it's a little more broad and they're just looking to create something that feels like in touch and tied to the apparel, right? So like when you walk in and when whatever the messaging of the apparel is, the fragrance feels like an extension of that. For something like American Eagle, we thought about the essential nature of what they have there, right? The denim piece, like the easiness of it, and built from there. But I would say like some of our most iconic fragrances in those retailers are actually standalone fragrances that really go beyond just feeling, oh, it's clean like a pair of jeans, and into feeling like something that represents a whole sort of consumer or age group, which we're very proud of.
That must be, to imagine like the as many corporate chefs are in that kitchen and trying to please them all must be insane.
It's funny, like you would think that, but it's actually, for us, at least, it's been pretty straightforward. I think people have a lot of respect for the olfactive process. And I think when you smell something that you know is good, you can confidently go in that direction. And I think we really try to come as those fragrance industry olfactive experts and lead them through the process. Like, if it's not fun and exciting to create a fragrance, forget it, right? Yeah. Like, you have to feel like it's cool, it's interesting, you understand it along the way. And in that sense, I think we try to make it easy, and you'd be surprised. It's not hundreds of mods usually.
Oh, wow. Really? That is actually surprising.
Yeah. That's crazy. So they just let you do your job.
Yeah, pretty much.
Imagine pretty much. That.
Have a vision and then let... We're so lucky, as you guys can imagine. Like, we obviously work with incredible perfumers at all of the biggest houses. And we, in many ways, like, as long as we convey the vision, we put it in the hands of the perfumer and they give us enough options that we can narrow down and capture something. But we've also been, I don't know if I would say lucky or convincing, and in some of the things that we've done in the retail space that were bold for what they are. Like, if you smell like a Fear Nothing for American Eagle, like that's a unique male fragrance or traditional cologne type of fragrance. It's a plum fragrance with a sandalwood and tonka, like richer base than you would normally expect. And it's been a long-lived hit and was not necessarily the easiest, most obvious option. So
that's so funny.
Yeah.
I would love to. That one actually like sounds, I've never smelled it, but it sounds.
Yeah. So incredible. Now you have to go and smell it, right? I think that's the thing too. It's you'd be surprised at for something to be in those retail spaces and stand the test of time. Like, they do really have to be great fragrances. Consumers have so many choices.
Yeah.
And they can trade up. They can get something really nice for a Christmas present. They don't, they have a lot of options. So for something to be a hit, it does really have to be special.
Sure. I just feel like there's no better way to tell if your fragrance is actually good than to put it in a mall. You know what I mean? Not that something in a mall can't be luxury or high quality, of course, but it's don't put it in a boutique. Just throw thousands and thousands of people at it every day and see what the consensus is.
Yeah, it's funny. I do generally believe in that, right? For me, I've always worked in mass and masstige, and I've always felt like making something that a lot of people like is a really cool thing.
Yeah. Having worked with so many different kinds of brands, we're interested to know, at what point do you find a brand decides to go into fragrance or beauty, and why? I suppose the why is a little bit more obvious, but is there a certain conjecture in the brand's life that brings them to you and says, oh, okay, I guess we need to try this? Or because it's being an American Eagle brand, just for instance, fragrance is quite different than denim in every aspect of creation and production and all that. So do you find that the brands are looking for a fragrance, but also more awareness or more popularity?
I think it really depends on who it is and where they're at. I mean, I think there are instances where we'll go to a brand and say, hey, we would love to extend you into the space. And sometimes it goes the other direction. But I think in many ways, fragrance is something that gets you physically into a store, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it engages you in the store. You spend more time, you're smelling, you're thinking about things. I think that's been always a critical part of why people get excited about the category. And it also creates a sense of loyalty and commitment and keeps you coming back for more when there are a lot of other choices. Mm-hmm. So I think it really depends on the brand and where they're at in their life cycle. But a lot of it is just thinking about how you can deepen that connection with the consumer, right? Like, how you can extend the brand into this whole other part of their lives, which I think is really exciting and like a privilege for us to get to work on. A lot of these brands really understand their consumer well, or just are an important, like, iconic brand. And it's pretty cool to be able to think about how to like put that in another dimension, in the dimension of scent.
Oh, I love that.
That's really cool.
I feel like that's such a like hopeful answer, or just trying to deepen the relationship with the consumer. I love that. And it's true though, because obviously our connection to scent is very deep-seated and very personal. So I guess it would make sense that you'd want to.
Yeah. No, and when you guys think about your mall emotions that you feel, like, that's a real thing, right? That you have, it takes you back to a time, it connects you to a time. It's your entire high school could be one fragrance that you bought over and over again. That's pretty cool. It's like cool for us to be a part of.
What was your mall fragrance growing up?
Oh my gosh. So I grew up all over the place, but I lived in London when I was in high school, and I shopped at the Body Shop, and I love that Dewberry oil. I don't know. Okay. It was such a 90s fruity with a musky. I think if I smelled it now, I would probably hate it, but it was my signature scent.
Oh my God. The Body Shop brings me back.
Just, I know, same.
Walking into the store, slathering so much stuff all over me and just leaving.
Yes. No, that was like where I lived and breathed. I mean, it was huge in the UK. I don't know if, I think it became bigger in the States later, but when I was there, that was where it was like BBW.
It was like the slightly more grown up version, I feel, of BBW.
Yes. And definitely the oil I thought was like really cool. I was like, thought I was like in like Laurel Canyon with my like perfume oil.
I love that.
When Le Monde Gourmand launched in 2014, was that with the intention as a standalone D2C kind of brand, or was it like within partnership of retail stores?
No. So it's interesting that you have your mall memories, because I feel like Le Monde Gourmand might be one of them, because when we launched it, we started the brand at Urban Outfitters.
That's right.
Yeah. So we were like, I had beyond fond memories of taking the train from our office in New York City to their headquarters in Philly.
Yeah.
And talking to the ladies who are now like very senior executives about, and they were just, we were just young people like, let's make perfume and let's see what a perfume could be like. And the first collection that we created for them was a totally different brand, which is somewhere in a warehouse. But, and then we started doing Le Mans Gourmand, and it was fun and exciting because Urban was and is a place where, you know, there's new fashion all the time. And there's a lot of different like niches within the store, right? So like, it's like, there's a gothy girl over here. There's like a kind of hippie girl over here. And like, for us, it was so interesting to play in that space and to think about how can we, you know, offer something that can change and evolve with her, right? And give her something or him something new to play with all the time. And from a practical standpoint too, as a retailer, they were able to purchase on a more regular basis than some of these big retailers who buy like twice a year. And so we just were able to get into this creative cycle that allowed us to offer fragrance that was moving with the trends. And ironically, like a lot of those fragrances are still our best-selling fragrances. So they weren't really like trendy in the sense of like coming in and out.
Right.
But it was such a great, and still is such a great partnership in that sense, because as a retailer, they really understand that idea of giving the consumer these different personas to play with, right? And like different styles to try on. And yeah, that's where we were born. So we really didn't become a true multi-channel brand and D2C brand until 2021.
Wow, that late. Wow.
Yeah, so we had a long time of being exclusive, and then for various reasons, we felt like it was the right time to expand and started experimenting on D2C and launching some small exclusives on D2C. And we were pleasantly surprised that our fans followed us there and were buying from Urban and also buying from us. And now we're at Ulta. So the rest is history.
Yeah, I remember Urban Outfitters being like my introduction to Le Mans Gourmand, because they were these very sleek and chicly minimalist bottles among the generally, it was like, I feel like 2014 was very indie sleaze era where everything was a little purposefully distressed and deconstructed. Le Mans Gourmand to me, it was like, oh, this is fancy for Urban Outfitters.
And it had this like funny, like when you think back at that time, it was almost like ironic that it was so truly was gourmand.
Yeah.
Like it was like Macaron Rosé, which we still have, which is this like beautiful sweet rose fragrance, and Pistachio Brulee, which was an OG pistachio fragrance. Mm-hmm. And it was all this like French patisserie mood juxtaposed with this other apparel vibe.
Yeah.
But it worked.
Wow.
It also feels like oddly, I don't know, forgive me, but ahead of its time, with because everyone is in their gourmand era now. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's the ethos of the brand, but not only that, but both the accessibility and the elevated sleekness of the deco on the bottles. It almost feels more 2024 than it does 2014 at this point.
That's nice to say. I hope it feels that way in 2034 too.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about the gourmand thing, like for us too, is I feel like everyone's always been in their gourmand era to a certain degree. There's always been, not everybody, right? But a lot of consumers really do love that like yumminess, right? Whether it's a floral yumminess, whether it's like a more direct vanilla yumminess, whether it's even like a woody kind of soft nuzzly, but it's there's always been that thread. Even if you look at like Bath & Body Works, Victoria's Secret, a lot of those fragrances, like there was a really strong gourmand element. And I think it will stand the test of time. People love to smell delicious.
So I feel like back then, maybe gourmand was more associated with younger youth, teen girls. So it was considered maybe a little juvenile, but or like a secret guilty pleasure. But now I think it's just the guilt is removed and we're just doing pleasure now.
Yes, good.
We're no longer feeling guilty.
As it should be. Yeah.
Because you're right. It is comforting and it's a very universally warm feeling you get from them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From where you stand, how do you think that the reputation of a mass fragrance as opposed to a luxury fragrance or a designer fragrance has evolved throughout your career?
I think that the with the creativity that's come from niche fragrance, so has creativity come to mass fragrance, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like there was so much love and obsession around like the mass fragrances of the 2000s, like the mm-hmm. J-Lo fragrances and all of yeah. that stuff. And people really came to understand, okay, it doesn't have to be high designer for me to love it and wear it and buy it and be addicted to it. And I feel like, as with many other categories, the quality of affordable fragrance has really come a long way. Like, it used to be difficult to do an affordable fragrance that had any kind of quality. And I think that piece has evolved. But I also think just the pure creativity of it has changed so much. And the idea that we can do all of these different, very expressive things in affordable fragrance has lent a credibility to it that I think is super exciting. And I think everybody these days knows that you can buy super high quality stuff at a very expensive price point one day, and you can buy something fun and affordable another day, and all of those things can live together.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that.
I feel also, I'm thinking like, okay, say I was like, I don't know, in my college days and just, you know, didn't have a lot of disposable income. It's just nice to have something that's affordable, but feels fancy.
Yes. Yes.
So everybody needs that midpoint where they can like, I can afford this or many of these and not have to redo my budget and just still feel good about it.
For sure. For sure. And if it's an entry point into developing a more sophisticated nose and getting excited about mm-hmm. niche fragrance, that's incredible too, right? If then you become more into perfume and you want to treat yourself and buy all your samples on Lucky Scent like I do. And it's amazing.
I go in store, but they like keep changing the number on me, but they're like, you're only allowed 2 samples per visit. And then last time I went through, it's 1 sample per visit.
Oh my gosh. They know they've got you now.
I know. I think my Polaroid is somewhere in the back room.
Yeah, literally. Your photo's on the wall in the back.
Yeah. Do not serve her. I'm not sure if this is what I think it is, but now that Le Monde Gourmand has its own presence, its own platforms, its own .com, do you launch every scent you launch on your own channels as well at Urban Outfitters?
No. So we try to keep it really fresh and interesting. I think we have things that are only at Urban. We have things that are only at Ulta. We have things that are only on our website. We have things that we leak out into special places that people can stumble upon and discover or not. We're lucky in that way because we've designed the brand to be so, I don't want to say easy, like not creatively easy necessarily, but easy to produce.
Yeah.
And we're able to do special things for special people, which is nice.
Okay. So when it comes to having these exclusive scents, what are the, I don't know if challenges is the right word, but like, how do you maneuver to communicate that scent just through online?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I'm sure you guys feel this way too, but like obviously having a podcast where you talk about smells, like exactly what it's such an interesting, the D2C challenge, quote unquote, which really, I don't even know why we call it that anymore. This is the world we live in. It's so visual. It's like, we have so much fun as a creative team building these scents to not just be the fragrance, but this whole visual and like even sound world around them. And so we're very happy always to put a fragrance in a retailer we're extremely lucky to have it just physically be in a space and someone can smell it. And that's amazing. But when we launch online and can do all of the visual world around it and the storytelling, it's a different level of experience that you can't necessarily even offer in store.
Right.
The way it looks and what inspired it and all these weird references. And like, we just did Fred's Fouetté, which is like the strawberry milk fragrance.
Yeah.
And we were like brainstorming about the shoot. And we were like, what if she, it was like a Valentine's launch for us. And we're like, what if she has like a bedazzled flip phone? And we were like, that's it. That's who she's waiting for him or her to call on the bedazzled flip phone. And things like that, it makes the whole storytelling experience so much more exciting. And I think it also just conveys more of what we care about in the brand, which is that fragrance is this like way to tell a story or extend your own story. So we have a lot of fun with the D2C.
Yeah. From what you're saying, it almost sounds like that is probably more successful than just not knowing if people, how many people walk into stores and pick up the scents.
Yeah, it is. It's also, at this point, it's a little surprising because like we launched Patel Ephemera exclusively at Ulta and it sold out online. Like just
how?
And we were like, it was a really exciting feeling because I think at this point we feel like there's so many people who haven't discovered the brand yet, but those that have can trust the blind buy. Mm-hmm. And what a compliment that is, I think.
Wow. That's nuts. I feel like Ulta is such a huge retailer in the States. I feel like I grew up in a Sephora bubble. There were no Ultas when I was growing up. It was only Sephora.
And really?
I had no idea that Ulta was like the store where everywhere, every state has an Ulta. And it shocked me at how much bigger it is than Sephora.
Totally.
But I'm so curious, like when you enter a store like Ulta, do they have these like outrageous demands or modifications?
Oh, not at all. I mean, I think the thing that's so exciting about this is true for most of these bigger retailers, like they want to be a destination for exciting brands.
Yeah.
And they want you to be yourself as a brand, right? Mm-hmm. That's how you got there. That's why people care about you. And so in the best type of relationship, it really just becomes this like truly a partnership where they're like, we're going to give you physical space and also emotional product development space, what people love about your brand, and they know what the consumer is reacting to. So it's, if you can have that dialogue, you really create amazing things. But no, we've only just begun with Ulta, and there's really cool things about like their conscious beauty platform, for example, like the pillars to be part of that platform with clean formulation, vegan, cruelty-free, like what you have to do to be certified within that, I think is really exciting. And it is a way that you can tell that story to your customer that's very credible, that would be really complicated if we just tried to do it on our own.
Yeah.
So I think things like that are, for a brand like ours, are really so supportive and just help the brand to have a bigger message and a bigger platform.
Totally. They're not really, I don't know, Ulta's a billionaire. So I was like, they're not taking too many chances. But
yeah.
It's cool to know.
It is cool. And this is off the record. If I'd said this, no, I didn't. But I, from our little inside baseball that we have being in the industry, I think Ulta takes a lot more time to actually nurture these brands and their relationships with these brands and are invested in the success of them. And I think you can see and feel that when you're in the store or even shopping online, whereas Sephora just bullies everyone. But that's neither here nor there. No, but I'm really excited when any brand goes into Ulta, because unlike Sable, I'm like the exact opposite. I grew up in an Ulta-centric world because we did not have a Sephora. And so I don't know. I just feel like Ulta's where like the real beauty person goes.
It's very, very, I don't know. It's just in a one that's in a suburb near me. And like even the kids that were working there, I felt like it was their truly like home away from home where they could like express themselves. Yeah. And it was, I'm like, you guys even live in this. It was just really refreshing. And they were so passionate about everything that they were talking about. It's so knowledgeable. And it's really nice to have a place like that, that you can go in your town.
Yes.
Right.
Where you can really be yourself and play.
Agreed. Yeah. Oh,
it's really cool.
Yeah. If I was a teenager, I would absolutely have applied to work at an Ulta.
Yeah, exactly. No, for sure. And you would feel like, oh my God, there's one store in the world that gets me.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Lately, we've seen in the past couple of years with this beauty boom, which gave way to the fragrance boom, beauty and fragrance sort of adopt this fast fashion model of releases of just one after the other. And it's faster than seasonal. So it's hard to put a pin in what the actual cadence is or what it means, other than just the bottom line, which is, I guess, valid for a brand. When you've been in retail for so long and also have D2C and are also expanding into a huge retailer like Ulta, does that sort of affect, as well as like culturally right now with these drop cycles, does that affect the way that you think about releases, or how has your release cadence evolved or not with the current beauty landscape of just being competitive?
I don't necessarily, I mean, it is interesting. Like the brand is not young, right? And the best-selling fragrances within the brand are from anywhere between 2014, 2017, and more recently. So it's not like we feel like we're necessarily like chasing newness, that that's all that the consumer is buying. Like, she's really buying her Creme Vanille and her Lait de Coco that have been out since 2017. Mm. So for us to do the newness, like even at a very basic level, it's almost a little bit just for us. Like, we want to be creating and playing in the fragrance space, and we're so lucky we can do it. Like, all of our glass is the same. So I don't want to say all we have to do, quote unquote, is go work with a perfumer, but that's what the brand was built on. If we have a creative idea, we can go and flesh it out and build it out and launch it, and we can do it in relatively small quantities, and it's not a huge risk. And if it does really well, then maybe we put it, bring it back and put it in a retail channel at a greater volume. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we're very lucky to have a model that lets us do newness, because it's such a creative and like expressive, obviously, in like medium. Mm-hmm. And you want to be expressing yourself in a new, it's almost like writing an album every year.
Yeah.
It's not like you run out of songs because you wrote a hit 10 years ago. Like, you still have so much that you want to say. That's how we approach it. Like, when we have something to say, we bring it out.
Yeah. I feel like with a name like Le Monde Gourmand, which is like thematically self-explanatory, I always feel like brands like that would, if you just come as they are and explain what they're about in the name, are usually, they're so clever and they're so approachable because of that. And then I get nervous because I'm like, what if they run out of gourmands? Like, how many gourmands in the world are there left?
Yeah, it's funny. Somebody asked me that the other day. And I think because we've been doing it for so long and we never really thought of it, sounds really silly, but we never thought of it as like, it's gourmand, like the olfactive category. Because really, we, even 5 years ago, I don't even know if like most consumers even knew what olfactive categories were. There's been so much,
still
which is amazing, but they're getting there. And it's because of you guys and other people in the space who are educating and talking and like creating this whole, or explaining this whole vernacular, which is so exciting. But when we thought about the brand name and we thought about like the world of the thing, we were really just, what can we keep doing that's like delicious and yummy and exciting? Like, it wasn't necessarily, it has to have a base of vanilla in this. It's, and I think we've done some things like our Santal Supreme that were not necessarily gourmands, but did really well for us and fit within the brand. So I guess we don't take it too literally. We just think of it more as, do you want to smell yourself all day and you feel like you smell amazing? It checks that box, and then it's within the brand framework. And I don't think take it too literally, which is good.
It's funny because I feel like we've been seeing so many of these modern gourmands that I think of Dia Sindurga Pistachio, where it doesn't smell like the nut pistachio, but it's just the idea of it. But at the same time, when we chase things like Tynan is obsessed with a cola note. So like any scent of cola, I'm obsessed with saffron, so I'll chase that. But there was one Mets Soufflé, your fragrance, which was the popcorn fragrance. And I'm obsessed with it because it's so weird. And I love that it's weird, but like delicious. And if you had said, if you had called it any other thing and just didn't mention popcorn, like, I don't think anyone would think like, this smells like popcorn. But I think it's just so, having the connection with the name and the idea and the scent is so nice.
Yeah. And I think that's the like magic of it all, is like, you give people these cues and they put it together in their minds.
Totally.
Which is fun.
I love that.
I know. It's almost like if you did do it literally, I think that would be equally successful.
Yeah. We do sometimes do, and it's, I'm embarrassed to say this in some ways, but we do sometimes take a little liberty with our French naming. Like, we have Melando, which is like watermelon, but that's not really how you say watermelon.
Yeah.
We just want it to be clear and understand, not necessarily even clear, just like that there's some connection there where you feel like, okay, I think I know what this is.
Right.
We have a French head of brand now, which he keeps us in check. That's not how that accent goes. And that doesn't mean what you think it does. Thank you, Bryce.
I love that.
That's really funny.
I did like what you said, though, about when you have this legacy of gourmand notes and this consumer loyalty, or whatever the fuck you want to call it. But it does give you this license to explore other things under the umbrella, like the Santal fragrance you mentioned. I'm not a Santal person by any means, but I would definitely smell whatever you put out under the Santal name, because I love what you do so much. And it's, I just like the vibe of the brand so much that I guess you can get away with murder now at this point, because you have such a cult fan base, including us, that you have licensed to do a lot.
Yeah, it's fun in a sense too. I was just thinking about, because I was looking back in the archives, like long, long ago at the, when Oud first became something that people were talking about outside of, I guess, the Middle Eastern market, who of course know and love Oud. I remember getting a like gourmand Oud fragrance from Firmenich as like a just a little like trend sample. And I thought it was so amazing, and everyone else was like, like it was way too much. Like it was so intense. And we did later on do an Oud fragrance. It's Oud Sahara. That's like a sort of a little bit gourmandy Oud. The other thing I love about doing creative fragrance at this price point is like you are trying to translate in a way that is going to be broadly understood, right? Like you're trying to take a little piece of Oud, keep it real, keep it authentic, but also wrap it in a way that more people can understand and love. And I think that's the fun privilege of having a brand that's been around for a while, is having a way to communicate these more complex ideas or polarizing ideas in a way that's maybe a little more user-friendly.
I'm just trying to like bake this thought before I blurt it out, but do you think that, I don't know, after, again, we've seen more and more people get into fragrances of all kinds, which is so exciting, but I feel like the conversations around vanillas and gourmands as a whole have evolved in a way that is liberating for someone like me, who just loves fun and loves to smell sweet and good. But have you seen not an uptick, but a different audience be attracted to your brand because of that? Because now some people are less afraid of approaching sweet fragrances in that way?
I think so. I think people have always wanted to smell like good, but they were afraid that sweet was meant like cloying. Like a lot of times when you ask someone like how they want to smell, and somebody told me, legendary person at Roberté told me this, like when you ask people how they want to smell, they say fresh, like what they often really mean is like more like sweet. And I think that's a very, like, if you think of like herbal essences shampoo or something like that, very clean, but a little bit fruity, a little bit sweet smell. I think a lot of people really are comforted by that. And to take away the idea that a gourmand scent is like heavy, overpowering, like makes you smell like, you know, or wearing like a, with all due respect, because I love Jessica Simpson, like a Jessica Simpson like dessert fragrance from the 90s.
Yes, yes.
That's not necessarily what it is anymore. It can be so much more sophisticated, or it can be so much more airy and light and easy. And like, I think we're grateful for that, obviously.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I'm always curious when you have these, I don't know if trend-driven is the right word, but when you are doing really fun things that don't take themselves super seriously, how do you forecast what to launch and when? How far in advance? Or do you just get a fun idea and you're like, cool, we can do this pretty quickly?
No, I mean, we have things that have been in the library for 2 or 3 years that we just loved and we've been like noodling on and working on. But I mean, we try to plan a year ahead. Oh, and when I say try, like my product development team, Kelly and Shannon, shout out to you guys. Like, we don't try, we do. Because you do need a year, especially we're in Europe now. Like, all of the things that go on with that, like, things need time to be created. But I feel like you have to trust your perfumers, right? Trust your fragrance houses. Trust the people that you talk to about trend and about where the market is going. And then you have to have your own instinct and the things that you get excited about. It's like anything in fashion. Like, you always think about like, how were these people working on this runway show like a year ago and feeling good that this thing was going to go down the runway and be cool? Like, I don't know. You have to believe in yourself a little bit and just, but it is weird. Like when we launched Fraise Fouetté, like that strawberry fragrance, there was another strawberry fragrance out at the same, I think there were two different strawberry fragrances from two other big brands or brands similar to us that came on at the same time. And it's like,
who could they be?
Well,
Yeah. And I love them both. But and it's just it's funny when you find yourself in that place where you just say, great, olfactive minds think alike, because here we all are.
That's really funny you say that, actually, because I think, as you'll know, certain retailers, not Ulta, but the other one, will dictate the category like 24, 18 months out. So when you walk into a Sephora and you're like, why is everyone launching a lip oil right now? It's because they fucking told you that you had to. But it is cool on the flip side to see like the evolution of trends and the responses to them. Not that yours was a response, but weirdly, I'm never right about anything. But like 18 months ago, I was like, I want more strawberry fragrances. Yeah. And here we are. I don't know why.
I think that's really true. If you look back at what you were feeling and looking at when you said that, you were probably saw a strawberry dress on somebody with a cute strawberry print. You don't even know how these things are going into your brain, but then they come out the other side of. And I think that's another cool thing about being in like a brand, having a brand that can play in these trend spaces, is like there are so many inputs from all over, of whether it's food, whether it's fashion, whether it's makeup, whether it's because like strawberry makeup was happening at the same time as a strawberry. It's just really fun to have this like other instrument to play, like the drums are playing, the piano's playing, and then you're like over here with your little perfume instrument playing the same song.
It is strawberry inception.
It's weird. It's weird. We were just thinking about what's the next one. Of course, I want to like ask you guys what you think the next one is. But the answer is no one really knows.
Fragrance mercifully moves a little slower than the rest of the digital current. I think because people like what they like and they're not going to change that based on what's new and hot. If anything, it's more additive than it is transference. I don't know.
For sure.
Was there ever a Le Monde Cameron scent that you guys made that you just didn't expect would take off, but it did?
Chai Épicé was one. I feel like we made a chai fragrance because we were like, oh, this is cool. It's like a fall fragrance. Mm-hmm. And we're not ashamed to be like, this is our pumpkin spice latte moment. Like,
yeah, hell yeah.
It's fun. And it's a really interesting, sophisticated fragrance. Had been out for a while, and then it really had truly like a viral moment, and people started rediscovering it because it's like it really is a very sexy scent, very close to skin, like nuzzly and interesting, and who knows, you know. And it only takes one person or a few people to say, I mean, you guys know I don't have to tell you how virality works, but like, like to say, this is how I interpret this thing, and this is why I wear it, and to change people's perception or have them go back and take another look or sniff at something.
Sure.
So cool.
Yeah.
I love that. Understanding that, you know, your brand is known for being fun and creative and imaginative, and also does come at a lower price point. So things are a little bit more accessible, I think, to most people. And you can have that impulse buy without freaking out about it, like you would maybe walking into a luxury, you know, whatever the fuck, a high-end boutique. Yeah. That being said, I'm sure the stakes are no lower because you are running a business. But what is the biggest risk that you have ever taken in terms of fragrance or anything else?
Oh my gosh, that's a really hard question. I mean, we've launched some unusual fragrances for sure in some collections where we were like Le Soda Pop and May Soufflé. We were like, I don't know, are people going to think this is like goofy? As I said before, I don't know that those are huge commercial risks in the sense that we're very lucky to have the structure that we have and the infrastructure for the brand and be able to play with these things and just see how they go. I think the bigger risks that we take are really more around retail partnerships, deciding to take the brand and build it as a standalone brand and invest in it and build a team around it. And those are the risks that really pay off, but it's the same risks as building any business. Like you have to believe that there's something there and be able to ride the waves of like disappointment when things don't happen when you think they're going to happen, or the sales of something aren't what you think they're going to be, and stay true to the vision. And the risks are, as you guys know, like running any business, every day you feel like, oh my gosh, all these people are on this journey with us. And you just want it to be successful, but you have to believe that there's something there and be able to persevere through the times where maybe the consumer isn't reacting like you thought or whatever it may be. Know that you can come back to the core of what you do and keep trekking along.
That's real. Yeah. That's way too real.
I know. I just remembered your guys' collaboration with the Gemini Baker.
Yes.
Meringue Magique. And I really like that scent. I guess I don't really, I never used to consider myself as much of a desserty scent person, but this one is, there's something nostalgically sweet and cake-like about it. It's just, yeah. It's hard to put my finger on, but it's so, ooh.
Yeah.
We know the Gemini Baker just through, I don't know, our like Instagram social network.
Yeah, for sure.
But I thought it was really cool that it wasn't, I don't know, some big, huge, proven pop star. It was like a cool indie artist that you guys chose to collab with.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, our first shout out to our first gal, Tanea Henry, who was our very first collab. And she's like a total legend, like OG Instagram girl, like, and also amazing jewelry designer and like designer of body wear. Mm-hmm. And that first collab was so cool to do something that expressed her brand, and she was so easy to work with. And we just ever since have been like super inspired to find unique creative people to build these fragrances with. Like, again, we're so lucky that we can do this. We have these incredible perfumers who are totally inspired to do this stuff with us. And to be able to like, it's just, I mean, it's similar to a musician wanting to work with a producer or something, or like another musician.
Right.
When you have the ability to do these collabs, it's so fun and cool. And also to let somebody like make a fragrance. Mm-hmm. Like, we have something coming up. I'll tell you a little tiny tidbit about it. We've been involved, obviously, in the perfume community online since the brand became part of the D2C landscape. And we have so many good people, friends, and supporters in that realm. And we were like, we should really do something with people who talk about perfume, people who review perfume, who love perfume. Mm-hmm. And so we have that in the works.
Ooh.
And so for
what does
people
that mean?
We're just collaborating with some of our many besties in the perfume talk space, which I think is like fun and exciting. And to be able to people like you guys who are so passionate about fragrance and have a vocabulary around it and really understand it, to be able to make your own scent and work with a perfumer, in some ways, it feels like the least I can give back to this community that has created this whole landscape that really didn't exist before. So, yeah, we're excited. Cool. We love a collab.
Man, cool. I really hope it's Jeremy Fragrance.
Oh, God.
I wish I had his number.
I'm good without his number, respectfully.
I don't. But he can call me anytime.
That'd be a long phone call.
Yeah. You would not get a word in edgewise.
No, you wouldn't. I'm interested to see who these collabs are with.
Me too.
I love that you brought up Jeremy Fragrance.
As soon as someone thinks like fragrance community and fragrance talk, I feel like maybe he wasn't the original fragrance influencer or vlogger, but he's certainly the most prolific.
Yeah, and most insane.
And I remember reading, I think it was like a GQ profile on him last year where he was meant to launch his own fragrance with, I think, his brother or something. It just like never came to fruition. I don't know.
Wow. Could be me.
You would think people would be banging down that guy's door to make him a fragrance to the world.
They probably are. It's probably coming. I love what she said about, I really liked how she talked about what was an American Eagle, how she would, the way that she interpreted their brand into a scent was very much not the way I thought that was going to go. And I was like, what a cool way into that. What a cool way to think about a creative concept.
Totally.
You know?
It's too, just thinking of, I'm trying to think of the most random brand that could have, like Patagonia. What would like a Patagonia scent smell like?
Patagonia has a beer collab right now.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I just drank it.
Oh. With who?
Talea, the best brewery in the world.
Are they local or do they just have that big ass space?
Yes, they are local. They have four, me being their brand rep. They have Williamsburg, Cobble Hill, West Village, and Bryant Park.
Oh my God, that's too many in one city. Spread out.
Listen, it's women owned. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's feminine. It's gorgeous. Let the girls entrepreneur.
Oh, the girls been entrepreneuring.
That's true. Wait, what do men call marketing? Oh, expansion. Let the girls expand.
Yeah. I'm all for a wacky brand collab, except my inner hater is like, none of it is legit unless it's with us.
The Smellulator beer coming fall 2024.
I love that. What's like the craziest collab we could do? The Smellulator.
Lube.
Speaking of lube,
it's come to this.
I will shout out Good Parts Lube.
Oh, yeah.
That shit is good.
Brooklyn made, right?
Yes. Queer owned. book unknown. Mm-hmm. We're using all the marketing jargon now. Identity jargon. I wrote a feature on the brand and the founder. And it's mm-hmm. funny because it was founded by a gay man. And he was like, obviously, with being gay, you lube is just automatically in the picture. It's just expected, both heterosexual sex. It's a touchy subject sometimes. So he's like, he's normalized straight people using lube. Like, dude, totally. You're right.
Yeah.
And the lube is really good. So I think they also sell at Urban Outfitters, if I'm not mistaken. And it's actually pretty cheap. It's like $20 or something. But
yeah, it's good.
Shout out to Good Parts.
Shout out to Good Parts.
Anyway, it's the end of our non-sponsored ads.
Yeah, it's the end of our lube episode.
Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this episode, please tell us what you liked about it on our little Spotify thingy. We really like reading them. I do. Tynan can't read it because he has Apple Podcasts, but
I have taste. Yes. Or you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Leave us 5 stars and say something cute. I've been talking to the mic. That's all I can give you people. But I appreciate you coming back month over month, year over year.
Agreed. We appreciate our listeners new and repeat. You can find our website, smellyleader.live, where our merch lives and our hotline lives. You can follow mm-hmm. us on Instagram at smellyleader.np3. I'm at Sabletooth Tigra.
I'm at Tynan Buck. And until next time, we will
smell you later.